Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us today from the Willen Academy of Music, willenacademy.com, founded by classical guitarist Kenji Haba. Question number one. The ability to recognize a pitch without an external reference is commonly referred to as perfect pitch. But what about the other extreme, tone deafness, the inability to even distinguish between notes? Which of these two musical conditions is more unusual in the world? Is it A, having perfect pitch is more unusual than being tone deaf, or is it B, being tone deaf is more unusual than having perfect pitch? And question number two, true or false, in order to hydrate the vocal cords, singers should drink water just before or even during a performance. Is that true or false? Vocal cord hydration. The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website that we had last week, onthisday.com. And today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May 29th. Well, it was on this day back in 1913 that Igor Stravinsky's composition, The Rite of Spring, premiered in Paris, 1913, today. And it was 64 years ago today, 1956, that Buddy Holly was inspired to write That'll Be the Day after he saw the John Wayne movie, The Searchers. And finally, it was on this very day, back in 1962, that Benny Goodman led the first American jazz band to play in the Soviet Union, 1962, today.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us. And he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces."
Kenny Rogers, the gambler, introduces our country music news. It's an obit. Country music icon Kenny Rogers dies at 81. This is published in Variety.com by Chris Morris on the 20th of March, 2020. Vocalist Kenny Rogers, who dominated the pop and country charts in the 70s and 80s with a string of sleekly tailored hits and won 3 Grammys, has died. He was 81. Rogers passed away peacefully at home from natural causes, under the care of hospice and surrounded by his family. Due to the national COVID-19 emergency, the family is planning a small private service at the time, with a public memorial planned for a later date. Rogers had announced a farewell tour in 2015 and was able to keep it going through December 2017. In April 2018, he announced that he was having to call off the remaining dates for unspecified health challenges. "I didn't want to take forever to retire," Rogers said. "I've thoroughly enjoyed this opportunity to say farewell to the fans over the course of the past 2 years on the Gambler's Last Deal tour. I could never properly thank them for the encouragement and support they've given me throughout my career and the happiness I've experienced as a result of that." Rogers' signature song, The Gambler, was added to the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry in 2018. It was the most recent of a lifetime of honors bestowed on the singer, which included induction into the Country Music Hall of Fame, 3 Grammys, and 6 CMA awards.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold up, when to hold.
Rodgers was one of the progenitors of country pop crossover at the superstar level. I came into country music not trying to change country music, but trying to survive, he said in a 2016 interview with CMT.com. And so I did songs that were not country, but were more pop. Nowadays, they're not doing country songs at all. What they're doing is creating their own genre of country music. But I told somebody the other day, country music is what country music people will buy. If the country audience doesn't buy it, they'll kick it out, and if they do, then it becomes country music. It's just the era of country music we're in. After establishing himself commercially via rock and pop-oriented singles with his group, The First Edition, the bearded, prematurely gray Rodgers was launched into the top rank of crossover country artists with a string of singles for United Artists Records. His appealing, sometimes gritty voice propelled 20 solo 45s to number one on the country charts from 1977 to 1987. Two of them, his 1980 reading of Lionel Richie's Lady and his 1983 collaboration with Dolly Parton, Islands in the Stream, penned by the Bee Gees, also topped the pop hits. Rodgers' ingratiating style has been the chief source of his immense success. Rodgers is a consummate storyteller with an intimate and compelling style that almost demands the listener's concentration. When his husky tenor voice slips down into a raspy, graveling register, as it sometimes does, Rodgers pulls the listener even further into his confidence. Rodgers parlayed his music success into a successful side career as an actor. His 1978 country chart topper, The Gambler, spawned 5 popular TV movies, while some of his other hits also inspired small screen features. Rodgers was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2013 and received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Country Music Association that same year. Born and raised in Houston, he was the 4th of 8 children in a poor family. He took to the guitar as an adolescent and would sometimes perform with another aspiring local musician and future star, Mickey Gilley. The article skips down, ends with this. I hope my fans understand that I'm a father first and a singer second, Rodgers said about his planned retirement from touring, mentioning at that time that he had 11-year-old twin boys with his wife, Wanda Miller. As it turns out, I'm missing some very great parts of my boys' lives. I know as well as anybody else how that time gets away from you, and I don't want to miss it. I just worry about how much longer I'm going to be here, and I want to have time to spend with them. It's pretty simple. Johann Sebastian Bach's Bure in E minor introduces our classical music news. It's entitled Coronavirus, the Bolivian Orchestra Stranded in a German Castle. This is published in BBC News on the 22nd of May, 2020. Oliver Barnes, the writer. The sound of panpipes, flutes, and snare drums fills the rehearsal space. The breathing techniques required to play these instruments for a few hours put you in kind of a trance, says Miguel Cordoba. But as soon as the rehearsal finishes, they all are too aware of how their life has changed, because they're not rehearsing back home in La Paz, Bolivia, but in the shadow of a German castle where they have been stranded for 73 days. The musicians, most of whom have never left Bolivia before, were expecting to spend just over a fortnight this spring touring East Germany's concert halls. Instead, they are holed up in the buildings and grounds of the sprawling estate of Rheinsberg Palace, a moated castle which has been home to generations of German royalty and aristocracy, an hour from Berlin. As the musicians, some of whom are as young as 17, touched down in Germany on 10 March for their tour, news broke that Berlin had to impose a ban on gatherings of 1,000 people or more in response to the coronavirus pandemic. As Bolivia's government announced it would close its borders, the orchestra scrambled to get home but failed. Germany's ban on mass gatherings was swiftly followed by a full lockdown, meaning the musicians are only allowed to roam as far as the forest that lines the perimeter of the estate. So their free time is spent rehearsing in the nearly 600-year-old palace grounds and exploring the surrounding woodland, home to 23 packs of wolves. Only on Monday did they get the chance to step inside the castle for the first time, as tours for the public reopened. "It's very different to my home. It's very beautiful," says 25-year-old Miguel. "There are worse places to be trapped. When I wake up, I watch the sun rise over the forest and the lake. But despite the picturesque natural surroundings, the musicians are worried that they have been forgotten. We feel abandoned," says Carlos. The group decided the only way to cope was to put together a strict practice schedule, 3 hours before lunch, 3 hours after, experimenting with a fusion of traditional Andean music and more contemporary genres. Indigenous music is all about the principle of community. Everybody can take something from what they are and offer it to the group, says Carlos, whose roots stretch back to Bolivia's people known for their musical healing ceremonies. Many of the musicians play a major role in providing for their families financially as well. And being unable to do this at the moment is exacerbating their anxiety. One of the palace's former inhabitants was Frederick the Great, who was given ownership of the estate by his father in 1736, before he ascended to the throne. His evenings were dedicated to music. The prince had concerts in his salon, where no one was admitted unless called. One of those performers was the composer, J.C. Bach, called the English Bach, who was the youngest of Johann Sebastian Bach's 18 children. "We all joke that Frederick's ghost is following us and trying to trip us up. I don't usually believe in such things, but it does feel as if there are ghosts on the grounds." As the season shifted from the early spring to summer, the musicians' heavy clothes, packed in anticipation of colder weather, were too warm for their long walks around the estate. Article skips down, ends with this. "The dreamy I'm dreaming of the day I will be in my bed in Bolivia and say, okay, this is over. But I also know that on that day I will start missing what is happening here," admits Carlos. Benny Goodman and his orchestra featuring Gene Krupa on drums performing Sing, Sing, Sing introduces our jazz and swing music news. It's an article entitled, Benny Goodman, the Ambassador of Swing. And this is published in Meridian.org on 2008. This article was selected because it was on this very day back in 1962 that Benny Goodman led the very first American jazz band to play in the Soviet Union. 1962 today. In 1962, Goodman became the first jazz musician to tour the Soviet Union for the State Department when he made 30 appearances in six cities during a five-week voyage. These occurred between the Berlin Crisis of 1961 and the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, at the height of Cold War tensions. Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev attended the band's opening night in Moscow and was welcomed with "Let's Dance" and "Greetings, Moscow," a number based on a Russian folk song. Khrushchev later sent Goodman a note, request reporting that he had been very pleased and delighted to be at the concert. Although Soviet policy had long declared jazz a decadent modern art form, Goodman and his orchestra discovered thousands of underground and knowledgeable fans. Since Russian officials had banned the American musicians from fraternizing with ordinary citizens, band members Phil Woods and Zoot Sims made contact with enthusiasts who called out to them from behind trees and bushes as they walked through Moscow parks. For his part, Goodman surprised the Soviets with an impromptu solo clarinet performance in Red Square. The New York Times noted that he became a visiting Pied Piper for curious children who swarmed around him in the shadow of the Kremlin. When Benny saw a squad of soldiers marching stiffly by to relieve the guard at the Lenin Mausoleum, the temptation was too much for him, and he broke into a rendition of "Pop Goes the Weasel." He then caught the rhythm of the passing boots, and the King of Swing kept time with the Red Army. Leningrad was the undisputed high point to the Goodman tour. Phil Woods befriended a local saxophonist and a pianist, starting an international jam session. On opening night at the Winter Stadium, the band played 40 minutes of encores. For the final concert, the audience remained after the last song, cheering and demanding more music. Over an hour after the performance ended, Goodman came back on stage in a sweater and slacks and played a solo. And in music research and technology, we have this article from The Week magazine, April the 3rd, 2020. A Canadian band called the Shaft Bottom Boys set a world record for the deepest concert by performing for 50 miners at the bottom of one of the deepest mines in the world. The band snatched the record by belting out Bruce Springsteen, Neil Young, and Johnny Cash songs at a depth of 6,213 feet below sea level inside a nickel mine in Ontario. "I was quite emotional when we went off the stage," said vocalist Steve Atkins, while bassist John Shegley described the experience as "extremely surreal."
I used to know you when we were young. You were in all my dreams. We sat together in period one, Fridays at 8:15. Now I see your face in the strangest places, movies and magazines. I saw you talking to Christopher Walken on my TV screen.
Fountains of Wayne's Hackensack introduces our rock and poppy music news. Another obit. Adam Schlesinger, 1967 to 2020. A life of melody and mischief. From Fountains of Wayne to That Thing You Do and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Schlesinger wrote songs with wry humor and lots of heart. This is written by Simon Vosick Levinson, published in Rolling Stone, May 2020 issue. When Adam Schlesinger developed symptoms of the coronavirus in mid-March, his friends thought he would pull through. A healthy 52-year-old, he'd been blessed all his life with both talent and luck. He was the most boundlessly energetic person any of them knew, with a career unlike any other indie songwriters, playing in multiple acclaimed bands and writing songs for movies, TV, and Broadway, among countless other projects. Like a lot of workaholics, he kept a million things going at once and was incredibly restless just sitting around, said Chris Collingwood, the lead singer of Schlesinger's best-known band, Fountains of Wayne. He couldn't really sit in the sun doing nothing or read a book or go to a movie theater because it felt like wasted time. He was a best friend to everybody, says Stephen M. Gold, who helped produce the more than 150 songs that Schlesinger wrote for a crazy ex-girlfriend in styles from show tunes to hip-hop. But on April the 1st, the songwriter, producer, and musician behind some of the most heartfelt, hilarious songs of the past 25 years died of complications from COVID-19 at a hospital in Poughkeepsie, New York.
I'll be here for you if you ever get back to Hackensack. I'll be here for you.
No one tells you when you're young that life is full of questions and there aren't that many answers. I've come to believe that sometimes yes or no depends on circumstances. Every morning I wake up, stare into my coffee cup, never knowing what I'll find.
North Carolina's James Taylor performing Flying Blind with Sheryl Crow introduces our local music news. It's an album review, Sheryl Crow's Threads, published in Variety.com by Chris Willman, 30th of August 2019. Crow is vowing this is her final album. If so, with Keith Richards, Maren Morris, St. Vincent, Willie Nelson, James Taylor, and more than 20 other featured guests, it's a heck of a retirement banquet. Flying Blind, a finger-picky duet with James Taylor, is about nearly all sure bets and safety nets being swept away in life's later stages and feeling fine about that. It's hard to get too angsty about existential uncertainty when Taylor is one of the reassuring voices. No doubt, Crow means it when she says this is it for her as an album artist. She's been saying it for the couple of years that she's been promising Threads. But will she stick with it, or is declaring that you're abandoning making music in the supposedly passé album form the modern-day equivalent of going on your first farewell tour? Threads is strong enough that we should probably all agree now not to shame her if she goes back on her word.
Blind, I got no net to catch me if I fall. Seems I'm only human after all.
Now and then I find myself back against the wall. With everything in front of me that I can't see at all.
As a follow-up to that, Jim Farber in Parade magazine on the 14th of February 2020 has an article entitled You Don't Know Me. James Taylor says these seven songs tell his life story. James Taylor, the iconic singer-songwriter from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, has penned and sung melodies and hits that audiences have loved for years. In a wide-ranging interview with Parade, Taylor shares the seven songs that he says best tell his life story. The James Taylor song that made him famous, Fire and Rain. It seemed like a matter-of-fact song, but it was heavy. When I wrote it, I played just the chorus for Joel O'Brien, who was the drummer in the band we had in New York, and he said, "You've just written your hit. That's the song." The song James Taylor likes to sing the most, because my audience responds well to it, and because it wears well, I like Carolina in my mind. I play it almost every time I perform, and I haven't tired of it. The song James Taylor wishes he'd written, You Don't Know Me. James Taylor's favorite song to sing in the shower? Oklahoma is a great loud song to sing in the shower. Songs James Taylor wishes more people knew? Mean Old Man. Also, Never Die Young. James Taylor's biggest hit, You've Got a Friend. The best song James Taylor has ever written, Sweet Baby James, has a rhyming scheme that's positively Byzantine. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, the ability to recognize a pitch without an external reference is commonly referred to as perfect pitch. But what about the other extreme, the inability to even distinguish between notes? Which of these two musical conditions is more unusual in the world? Is it A, having perfect pitch is more unusual than being tone deaf? Or is it B, being tone deaf is more unusual than having perfect pitch? Correct answer, answer A. Having perfect pitch is much more unusual than being tone deaf. Perfect pitch is very rare. Only about 1 in 10,000 people, about 0.1% in the world have absolute, or as it's commonly known, perfect pitch. Many people never even discover that they have that ability. On the other hand, being tone deaf is about 400 times as common as having perfect pitch. About 4% of the world's population are tone deaf. Tone deafness is referred to as amusia, and it is when a person cannot distinguish between musical notes. Tone deafness has been linked to childhood fever and is associated with indifference to music, fear of embarrassment, and depression. And the answer to our second question, true or false, in order to hydrate the vocal cords, singers should drink water just before or even during a performance. Is that true or false? Correct answer, false. Answer B. You cannot hydrate your vocal cords quickly or directly by drinking water, even though a lot of singers do so just before or even during a performance. It's not wrong to do this, but the fact is that no drink or food can come in direct contact with your vocal cords because of their protective layer. The only way the vocal cords get hydrated is after a long time when the body has absorbed the liquid. So this means that drinking water only refreshes you but does nothing immediately for your voice. Let's close out today's program with a tribute to all who died in any war, as recognized by the holiday Memorial Day, celebrated earlier this week. Taps. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for music, phone me at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.